The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for the 1979 movie Hair. If you do not wish to have this movie spoiled, please watch the movie before listening to the following podcast. Is it a fun movie version of a famous musical, or does it need a haircut and a real job? We watched Hair from 1979 to see if it was redeemable. Were we successful? Find out after the theme.
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it too good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? Got bad. I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project Redeeming Features Cast, this time looking at Hair from 1979. I'm your host, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by my good friend and co-host,
Christian Fletcher. Thank you. It's great as always to be back, Trevor. And I don't know necessarily if the movies are always good, but I know I always enjoy our chats. So thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. And just to, so you all know, yes, we had more technical issues. And again, we are recording a redeeming features for a movie for a second time because the first one disappeared somewhere into the internet and could not be retrieved. So yeah, we admit we already know each other's opinions, but hopefully we can still guide you through the joy of discovery as we work out whether this movie is redeemable.
I suppose you've got me to blame for this, Trevor. So I'm glad I was able to suggest Hair from 1979. So even though, as you said, I do know your opinion, I'm always happy to chat with you and your thoughts about the movie.
Absolutely. It's not just about the opinions. It's so much more, like what the movie is about, for example. So I'll grab this little quick summary from the web. The vital, idealistic energy of this musical epitomizes the spirit of the 1960s as the age of Aquarius. A square Oklahoma Vietnam draftee on his way to an army training camp in Nevada, who was adopted by a group of New York City flower children.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sums it up in a nutshell, with probably about 35 songs woven into it in between and making a 2-hour movie. So yeah, I think that sums it up quite well, and being an adaptation of a hit Broadway, I suppose we could say, Broadway or worldwide hit musical. So I think that pretty much sums it up quite well.
Excellent. And of course we do need to talk turkey trivia. So I've dug up the figures for this. So first let's talk turkey. It's rated 7.6 out of 10 on IMDb, so quite high for a redeeming features movie. The budget was $11 million. It took $15.2 million at the box office in the USA. And because we've only got the USA figures here, it since had rentals totaling about $6.8 million. So considering when it was made, that probably was considered quite successful.
Yeah, and I think it's sort of subsequently, it's kind of gone on to be a bit of a, not a sleeper hit, but yeah, sort of one of those movies that sort of came and went. But I don't know, I sort of throw the word cult classic around a lot, but it's definitely kind of got cult status. But yeah, I would have thought that the figures would have been higher. But that sort of touches on some of my opinions about the film adaptation, and probably the fact that, was it possibly 10 years too late and that could have been reflected in the box office? So I don't know, but we will touch on that a bit more.
Indeed we shall, but we'll talk a bit of trivia as well first. I've got a few bits and pieces here. Now, the director, Milos Forman, he attended the very first off-Broadway performance of Hair in 1967 in New York. He told the musical's creators that he was interested in making a film version of the stage musical and to please consider him for directing its production.
Gosh, what a shame that he didn't strike while the iron was hot and actually make it when Hair was probably a bit more relevant in the late 60s. So, but I suppose he was happy to have ended up helming it sort of, 12 years down the track. But interesting choice for director. You know, like when I think Milos Forman, I think Amadeus and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and essentially Hair very much had the feel of those movies, very much in the style, I suppose. But yeah, he was a very interesting choice, but interesting to know that he was speaking to them from day one about it and ended up fulfilling that role. It's very interesting.
Yeah, but then you look at another bit of the trivia, and I don't know if he was their first choice, because George Lucas was offered the chance to direct the movie in the early 1970s, but turned it down as he was developing American Graffiti.
Oh, gosh. So that might have even changed the entire course of his career, and he may not even ended up making Star Wars. He might have ended up just being known for this hippie tribal music from the early 70s. So that is some interesting bit of trivia. And you know, I've heard of, you know, things such as, you know, people like Madonna and, oh, there were some others, I think it was even Patrick Swayze, auditioned to be dancers in this film adaptation. And, you know, obviously it's filled so many hippies and a lot of crowd sequences and things like that. So, yeah, a lot of famous names were sort of auditioned but turned down for appearing in it. And I always get excited seeing Beverly D'Angelo actually pre-National Lampoon's Vacation. And she actually, I don't know if it's just me, Trevor, she seems older in hair than she looked in the 80s. I don't know if it was the hairstyle or something. Oh, how appropriate hair.
Yeah, I think it may have been, to tell you the truth, but I did notice that as well, thinking, hang on, how can she look older in this than she does in National Lampoon's Vacation? It was very interesting.
I know.
But just to continue on with that George Lucas connection, once it was made, the publicity for the picture stated the film was the Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope movie musicals, and the best movie musical since Cabaret.
Oh, interesting taglines. But the funny thing is, I'd probably compare it quite a lot to Cabaret in the fact that it had pretty much, I don't know what's the polite word to use, it pretty much messed up its source material and pretty much created something totally different to the stage adaptation. And I think that probably comes down to a lot of the reason why I've chosen this for redeeming features. You're probably wondering, with such a high rating, why a film like this was chosen, but it sort of has got so many detractors, this film. There's a lot of people that love it, and there's a lot of people that adore the stage show and just see that this is an absolute abomination, you know, of the source material. I came into Hair very much as a fan of the movie, actually. You know, I'd first seen that, and then I've subsequently, you know, got to love the soundtracks and got to know all the extra songs and watched a lot of productions on YouTube and things like that. So I'm a lot more familiar now with the stage show. So going back to the movie, as we have done with this podcast, it infuriates me somewhat. So that's probably a lot to do with why we've chosen this today, Trevor. So that will come up. That will come up a lot, the major plot changes in a lot of my my reason for this choice.
Fair enough. And I think that leads us nicely to us setting our baseline. You may have even done that for us. But I've been to Amazon, and I've had a dig through the reviews, and I've dug this one up, and I think it might... I get the feeling that you may be nodding along to this. The title for this review is Great Rock Opera, Poor Rendition. This great classic rock opera was poorly directed and delivered. Quite disappointing for anyone who knows how much better it could be and has been. 1 star.
Yeah, I am nodding along, Trevor, and I don't want to say it so much because it's not a bad film, you know, and it's just such a shame that, yeah, it was so changed from its source material. But then I suppose when you think about it, you know, I don't know if you're familiar, you know, with the musical that well, but it's very much, pretty much a whole heap of hippies singing songs that are very linked very loosely. And you can see the plot coming through, you know, a little bit in the film, but they've changed a lot of things. Like, I think the role of Claude, who ends up is the guy from Oklahoma that comes, you know, that's going to be drafted. He's actually one of the hippies. So it changes a lot of the context of the songs. And a lot of times too, they just break out into, you know, the songs, you know, this is in the movie version, I mean, they break out into the songs just because they have nowhere else to put it, or they'll use it as a backing track or something like that. So it is quite a mishmash in that respect. But, you know, in its defense, having come into it, you know, originally as a fan of it from a movie point of view, I can't diss it from that point of view. So
fair enough. And yeah, you do mention it because, I mean, I'm not that familiar with the musical itself. I do have the musical soundtrack on vinyl as a prized possession. But I came in pretty fresh because I wasn't that familiar with the movie, and I certainly haven't actually seen the musical. But you mentioned the main character there, Claude, being the Vietnam draft, played by John Savage. And when he first turns up, I mean, it's very drab and very grey, and got this very rural area, and everything's very dull and understated as he gets taken to the bus by his father. And I really do get the idea that that was a very deliberate choice. And it was also very lucky that the bus came right on time, just as I got there as yeah. well, because, you know,
not convenient.
Hanging around too long in that mist. But then, then as he travelled along and as he got further away and as he got closer to New York, you know, the colours got brighter and everything got sunnier, and he finally arrives in New York in the middle of a hippie sing and dance along.
Yeah, and it seems like everything seems to revolve around Central Park for some reason in this movie. It's like they got a really a good deal on location shooting there or something like that, because, yeah, it seems like we are introduced to Claude arriving there from his very bleak, you know, bleak, misty, or foggy opening. And, yeah, that was one thing that hit me, Trevor, was, yeah, I was wondering why I've always, you know, always found that opening sequence so slow, and that sort of has set up the whole fact that, you know, he's gone from this bleak lifestyle to this very Age of Aquarius, you know, hippie lifestyle, which, how appropriate, that is the infamous song which is playing at the time. But I actually think it's a clever scene where they actually, it sets up, it's almost like it could have been a scene from the musical. It's like they've set up all the founding character, I mean, sorry, the main characters, like Beverly D'Angelo's characters, the hippies, Claude, and I suppose all the dancers, you know, and it was quite a clever way of sort of merging them all and introducing them in one big scene. But it did end up being quite an interesting scene, let's just say, as soon as horses became involved in the dance routines, etc.
Yes, indeed.
You've got a lot of, you've got, I think it's Twyla Tharp, I think that's how you pronounce it. She was famous for being a Broadway choreographer, and you could, and she did all the choreography. And there were some interesting things there, and a few dance moments where I actually scratched my head and thought to myself, Trevor, I don't think hippies would have actually done that dance. But, you know, as I said, it was made sort of 12 years after the fact, so maybe they're thinking no one would remember. But what am I to, who am I to say to criticize them about that? They lived through it more than I did. So, yeah, so that's very relevant quite, you know, throughout. So, yeah, at least they set that up quite early on. And there seems to be, like, they throw every conceivable song at you within the first sort of 5 and 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, right from the start, it doesn't let up with the music. I mean, we've got the iconic The Age of Aquarius. Then after Claude gives them one coin, the hippies suddenly have enough money to rent a horse so that one of them who wants to ride a horse gets a chance to ride a horse. Never mind the fact that they said they were all hungry and one of them's pregnant. No, they've got to make sure that this guy gets to ride the horse.
Yeah.
Rides up beside Sheila, Beverly D'Angelo's character, and then launches into yet another, shall we say, very colourful song that was quite entertaining, but certainly shows that this probably isn't a movie for kids.
Yeah, definitely. And it probably, it also made you realize straight off how controversial the stage show would have come out when it came out how controversial the stage show was when it came out in 1966, I think, was a very, very first sort of off-Broadway production. So being quite controversial. So coming out in 1979, but hey, I must admit, you know, this and a couple of other songs there were a couple of moments where you went, oh, this is so not PC nowadays. So yeah, and that is some, you know, talk about a way to win over the upper class debutante, you know, on the horse. But yeah, it seemed like they just kept riding around the same area, or, you know, it's the same thing in a circle, the whole park. I don't know. It just seemed to be constantly going on the same way.
Yeah, well, they did to a point until the hippie falls off. So Claude jumps on and gets his chance to show off his horsemanship by doing tricks, and then proceeds to ride way in front of them so that when they get to a fork in the road, they just, Beverly D'Angelo just rides off in a different direction, pretty much ignoring what he's getting up to.
Meanwhile, the hippies are breaking out into yet another song, so got to cram another one in there. So,
and I think they did. Yep.
I think it's from there that, you know, I think that pretty much, you know, he's revealed to them that he's going to be drafted. But I think it's that they're like, oh, stop being drafted. We're going to go and get you really high. So they take him pretty much into a tunnel and smoke hashish. And this is yet another excuse to bring out a song. And I love it. I think the song's actually called Hashish, and pretty much the lyrics are pretty much them reciting, you know, things like, you know, like cough syrup and, you know, shoe polish and all these other things they sniff and whatever. And yeah, so as you can see, it was quite colourful for the time that it would have come out, and I suppose even by the late 70s, so that the hippies didn't hold back in introducing Claude. But it does sort of put an interesting spin on it, the fact that Claude was originally a hippie in the original stage. So I'm just trying to think the context. I really think they're just singing about what they like to smoke.
yeah. Well, I think that song was quite fun, but when they started singing the song with regards to what the baby would be once the I should probably remember her name.
Is it Jeannie? Yeah, and I think it's the song.
Jeannie.
Yeah, the song's "Colored Spade." If that kind of gives a bit of an indication into the connotations with that one. So
yeah, I don't see them if they did try to do the movie again. I don't see them including that song.
Yeah, and I'm actually quite surprised. I think I heard there was a new Broadway production from about 2 or 3 years ago, and I was actually really quite surprised the song was still in the production, so the same lyrics and everything. So, yeah, that's quite interesting. I suppose you could always say it's historic. That's your way around it. But, yeah, I think even watching it now, it's quite controversial because, again, every lyric is pretty much him listing every possible, I suppose, what we'd now see derogatory term for African-Americans. So, so Hair was very cutting edge, especially in the way it portrayed a lot of this stuff, you know, in a musical of all things.
I do like, you know, leading into that, Claude's telling them what he's going to do before he heads to the draft office, and, you know, he wants to take a ferry ride around the harbour and see the Statue of Liberty, and he wants to check out some other stuff while he's got the chance. And so what do? They go, well, we'll take care of you. Get him high and let him sleep in an underpass in Central Park for his first night in New York. And then as he tries to leave, they just want to let him get away, because that's when the main hippie guy, Berger, played by Treat Williams, gets him back to show him that he's found a newspaper with Beverly D'Angelo's debutante ball prominently plastered in the society pages, so they know exactly where to find her and when.
And it seemed like another excuse yet again to go and sing another song, because there's that song "I Got Life," which he sings hanging off the chandelier. So as you can see, they do end up crashing the party. So they so it seemed like another excuse for them to do that, because this is another part where it gets quite confusing, because in the original stage show, Sheila's actually a protester. That's sort of, she's not a hippie, but she's very much, I suppose, the way Beverly D'Angelo sort of dresses and all that is very similar to that. But Sheila plays, a protesting student that ends up, you know, becoming friends with the hippies. So it was quite strange that they sort of changed it a lot, and it was like they were really trying to flesh it out even more and giving sort of, rather than them just breaking out into the next song, giving them a whole new scene to build them around. And obviously the party scene doesn't end up quite well with him dancing along the table and all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. But you do notice, like, it's probably like one of the things where you see that the movie lacks a bit of consistency, because when she's riding around the park and she's being harassed by these hippies and their new friend Claude, she's very aloof and she barely glances at them, and so it's like, oh no, stay away from me, you smelly hippies. But once they turn up at the ball and start singing, the cat's back to her, and she's just grinning, and she's obviously loving these hippies that have suddenly turned up, that she's obviously been spending most of her time ignoring and giving no consideration to.
Yeah.
It's a very, very, very quick change of character for her.
But remember, they were getting stoned in the bedroom as they were getting ready, so maybe she was off with the fairies at the time. I don't know.
Oh, that's right. Yep, debutantes with a doobie. Write that down.
Oh, yeah. It's a good name for a band, maybe, or an album. I don't know. We digress. But I think it's pretty much from there when they get caught at the party, when they get sort of taken to, I won't say the prison, but they get taken to the courthouse, and then they sort of get interrogated by the officers, I suppose what you could say, and we're led into the iconic theme song Hair, which actually, you know, was really quite exciting. And that's one thing I haven't said up till now, is all the way that the songs are filmed are really quite exciting. And I compare it a lot to, you know, a musical we've looked at before, The Wiz, which was filmed in all, you know, different parts of of New York. And I remember us looking at the filming of that by Sidney Lumet going, oh, it was so badly edited. But one thing I noticed with this, the dance sequences were just so fun and energetic. And, God, you'd want to love it. Within the first 20 minutes, you're thrown probably about 10 or 15 different versions or medleys and all sorts of things. And by the time we're getting to Hair, a very clever way of doing it, and obviously throwing hair around in lots of blow dryers and wind machines, obviously seems to be the way to go and was quite appropriate.
But it goes from the lyric, my hair is a home for the fleas, a hive for the bees and stuff like that. But that hair that was being blown around and showing, and just going everywhere, that had no fleas in it. That looks like it was straight from a shampoo commercial.
They probably just cast it that way.
Flinging their hair to one side and it was streaming out in the breeze.
Oh, it looks better on camera that way, the less dirty. I did like that. And the way they staged the dance numbers is so well. That said, being a fan of the musical now, you do see even up to this point how many songs they have skipped out or the context in which they've sort of put them into, And I think, in I suppose Miloš Forman's defense, it was probably a lot to do, and I don't know if I'm not sure if he ended up, he would have had something to do with adapting the screenplay, but it would have been a conscious effort to flesh it out and make it have a bit more substance. But I don't know, it still found it really hard to sort of get into the characters and sort of feel anything for them, aside from possibly, I don't know, Berger. I think the Treat Williams character as the lead hippie, he was very likable and he felt very much the leader of the show, and that sort of harks back a lot to the stage show, which essentially Bergen narrates it. Sort of, he gets up in front of the audience and sort of tells the story of all the different their beliefs and them burning their draft cards, and then they'll break out into the different songs. So I suppose it stems a lot from that, and I think you needed it because you wouldn't want to have John Savage leading it. I felt his performance was quite quite wooden or shocked, almost constipated even.
Yeah, he did walk around just looking stunned at most of what was going on. He didn't really seem to have a great deal of range, except perhaps when they get out of the prison and like Berger actually ends up going to his parents to get the bail money to get everybody else out after he uses Claude's emergency $50 to get himself out of prison to get him bailed out, and they all end up at this big concert back at Central Park, and around comes the pounds, shillings and dime man, if you just think about those initials emblazoned across a hat, who very ritualistically gives everyone in the line a cube, and he runs out when he gets to Claude just before he gets to Berger, and Berger looks very put out by that.
I love how he's got his tongue stuck out as far as he possibly could, like it's breakfast time. But it's sort of into this territory, Trevor, that I kind of this part of the movie always annoys me because it is just so, can't say way out, but it's not even way out in a Hair kind of way. Like he has his LSD trip, but I've seen LSD trips done in movies possibly 10 years before this, done better than the way it's done. And I think it's they're pretty much in a farmhouse in a barn with lots of smoke. And I think obviously it's, referencing sort of Claude's background, and a lot of Beverly D'Angelo hovering on wires and things. And I remember watching this movie with a friend a couple of years ago, and we just looked at each other at this part and went, what the hell? I suppose it probably sums up an acid trip and an excuse to throw in as many songs as they could that they'd cut out of the musical.
It's very, very much a mashup of songs during that. But I think this is probably, like, up till this point, I really was kind of just going with it and enjoying myself, and then this whole sequence started, and particularly the way that Berger was behaving, it seemed to be some cracks in the facade. It was about this time that I was also finding that Berger was actually like quite domineering, like didn't seem quite the fun, easygoing guy that was originally portrayed. And then this whole, I was just really having issues with the LSD dream sequence. It was, it's such a departure from what has come before. And like you said, it's just weird. I know it's not meant to be the most sanest thing out there, but it just clashes so much with everything else that's going on. And it kind of really takes you out of it.
Yeah, handled so much better, like I think it could have been. But, you know, that's, yeah, and that's probably one of the big parts of it that I've always scratched my head and gone, what the hell is this? So, and, yeah, so I was happy when this ended because it just seemed to go for ages, that bit as well.
Oh, it goes way too long.
Long trip for Claude. Maybe he wanted to stay in there as long as he could so he didn't have to go back into being in the movie. But anyway.
Yeah, he get back to looking constipated, I believe.
Yeah. But I don't know if I've got it right chronologically, but I think it's now it kind of redeemed itself by going into the other sort of cheeky scene, the black boys and white boys scenes. I think it's now. Oh, no, sorry. I think I'm skipping ahead because Claude has, after his trip, he's pretty much.
Oh, you skip the whole skinny dipping scene.
Oh, yes. I keep thinking that. Of course. That happens before he goes. Yes, because Hair being famous for its nude scene at the end of Act 1, I got the feeling this was thrown in as a, we better do it to keep the fans happy.
Yeah, got to make sure we get some boobs there, even if they, you know, they're just Beverly D'Angelo's. But I did notice, like, because they all dive into this lake in Central Park and... Claude and Sheila, they do keep their, you know, their briefs on, even though we get to see the butts of everybody else. And as they come out, they find that everyone else has disappeared and stolen their clothes. And then you have Sheila get really annoyed, and she actually hails a taxi, you know, naked except for briefs and dripping wet, and gets in the taxi. And then suddenly everybody else turns up fully dressed and completely dry. And hand their clothes to Claude, hand Claude his clothes, and he's completely dry too. It's just like, that's just, I just couldn't help but notice just how quickly he was bone dry.
Yeah, it's a really bad editing there, scene. I think, or bad continuity. So, yeah, I did notice that as well. So, and then of course they've got the whole saga of having to get the bag back to her. But anyway, so I think from here it's kind of going into the whole, so he's had his fun with the hippies, so I think it's now time to get serious, and he's got to go off to be drafted. And I actually really like that clever scene with Where Do I Go, which is him walking through the city, and there are all the people around with all the bags, and they're all sort of ducking, and I don't know, it's quite well done. It's probably the only, it was sort of the first one in a while where he'd gone back to doing sort of a musical sequence, because, you know, aside obviously from the LSD trip, it had been sort of a while in the movie where we'd had a sort of song like that.
Yeah, and so that song, and then going in, I suppose, again, another homage to the nude scene. There's all the recruits get to stand in front of the selection board, all completely nude, covering their bits with their hands, and then that recruitment song started. white boys, black boys, and that was glorious. I was laughing.
Yeah, it was so clever. Because I think in the original stage show, like, it's just sung by two women, or, you know, and it's so funny how they've changed it to be the recruitment officers, you know, and the sort of being sort of backup vocals and doing it sort of doo-wop style. It's very funny. And I have actually screened Hair before, and I do remember that in that particular scene, the audience was roaring with laughter. So that was a very clever decision, actually, to go against the source material. And I think it was something that the movie needed around that point, because it was about to get very serious as soon as the war stuff starts coming in. You start to sort of wane away from it being a sort of a movie musical where they break out into song, because they were starting to hit on some heavy stuff. But then Hair was never supposed to be light. It was about a response to the Vietnam War. But, as I said, that was a sort of last glimpse before things started to get a bit gloomy.
Yeah, because, I mean, it was after that, and of course Claude goes off, and they go back to the hippie group, that it really, again, I was finding, like, Berger's domination of the group getting rather unsettling. And then, to top that off, suddenly Lafayette is faced with his ex and his child, and he's just brutal to them. They even have a shot to the kid, just, you know, with tears coming down his cheeks, and he storms off, and then the rest of them try to sort of chase him to bring him back, and then there's just this heartbreaking song from his ex, just out of nowhere, very subtle, very, very still, no wild dancing with that. And it's just like, but these guys, I was liking them to this point, but now they're really not very nice people.
It's like they've just neglected their everyday life to go and live these hippie lifestyles and left everyone else behind so they can go and ride horses and collect change. So, yeah, it's at that point that you start to realise, you know, it's a bit strange. But then I don't know, I can't remember if what the segue was, but going, it goes from her singing the song and then the next thing she's going along with them to go and see Claude. I can't remember. It escapes me how it gets to that stage.
Yeah, well, because she was talking to Jeannie because she was wondering if the child that Jeannie's carrying is Lafayette's child. And she's going on just thinking, oh, whoever's child it is, I don't mind. And from that, she's persuaded to join in on the road trip so that they can go and visit Claude in Nevada at the army base, which is a very, very sudden, strange decision. Sheila runs up with a letter from Claude, and they find out where he is, and that's it. They're doing a road trip, and they're also taking Lafayette's ex and child along with them for the ride because
that's just what they do. Yeah. An excuse for them to all sing in the car and do all those other things. I don't know, but yeah, it was quite strange around this point because, yeah, as you said, you've got them going, him going off to the army. But actually, while we're talking about that, I'm actually like, not that I normally enjoy films that deal with this sort of subject matter, but when that training montage was actually really well done, and I think it was over the song, I think it was Walking in Space. Can't remember. And while he's training, and it's actually really well edited together and, and really gets through it quite quickly and sort of gives you a bit of an idea of what sort of training these guys would have gone through. And yeah, I thought that was quite well done.
Yeah, it was definitely well put together, but it was also, yeah, like, again, when you look at the first part of the movie and leading up to that point, it was very serious and in some cases quite brutal. I mean, they certainly didn't hold back with showing what these guys were going through in their training, and then that's flicked over to again the hippies in the car having a sing along with Sheila singing "Good Morning Sunshine," even though at that point, the kid has completely disappeared. That kid is not in that car.
He's sick of
during
it.
That song.
He's sick of their singing. That has to be it.
Like, where did he go? There's the mum joining in with the song. Yeah. But there's no sign of the kid.
But yeah, and then we're leading into what we know is, we sort of get the feeling, we know it's going to be a sort of an inevitable sort of ending there. And then I think, is it before? Oh, yeah, it's before that that they go and no, it's after that that they go and steal the uniform so they can. Oh no, sorry, it's before. Yeah, I can't remember the order, but they steal. Sheila goes and seduces the guy in the pub, and so that she can get the uniform so that Burger could go in and get Claw. That's it. Sorry, I just had to remember the order.
That's okay. Yeah, it happens rather fast, and it includes a great bit where Beverly D'Angelo is driving off with this guy and somehow getting him out of his uniform and getting it on herself while he's driving. And then the hippies come out, they're driving behind him, and then they manage to screech their tires on a dirt road, which is something I always find annoying in movies. It's like, no.
It gives it a bit more effect. But anyway, yeah, not a good choice.
Yeah, it gives it a stupid effect. And yeah, so there's a big, long, evolved plan, and leaving the poor army guy stuck in his underwear in the middle of the desert. So, you know, that's pleasant.
But it's funny how, like, we were talking earlier about how Burger gets really quite pushy and things like that and sort of always gets his way. But again, he manages to weasel, wear the uniform, have a haircut, and weasel his way. And the next thing he's got, army guys taking orders from him. Like, so he manages to get himself, it also, and as you're saying about it happening so quickly, it all seems to happen so easily as well.
Mm-hmm. And then, again, part of the big plan is, they realize that they can't sneak Claude off base because they keep doing head counts and keep checking them very, very readily. And so, okay, that's it. We'll swap uniforms again. So that Claude can pretend to be the senior officer getting off the base and and Burger sort of like fills in for him while he goes off to join the picnic that's been set up nearby.
Mm.
And I think this is where they tried. I don't think we've touched on it because it's barely there. The whole Claude and Sheila romance that keeps trying to be set up, but there's just nothing there. Yeah, even at the end of this picnic where, you know, they're meant to be having a tender moment together, I think the most romantic they get is a peck on the cheek. There's just no chemistry between those two. The whole burgeoning love story between these two, I don't know, squares, straights, whatever you want to call them, just falls flat. At one point I thought, you know, that Sheila was way more interested in Burger than Claude, because she just seemed to react so much better to that character.
And it was like they were really, yeah, forcing a relationship or you know, we've got to have a love interest in this movie big screen adaptation, you know, whereas, you know, in the original, I can't remember how Sheila fits in with whether she falls in love with one of them. I don't think she does. So again, it's one of those things where it's like, have they gone and made a lot of these changes just so they can, it can be more movie friendly. But in terms of chemistry, it's not there at all. And all of it just seems so forced, like the hippies are trying to force them the whole time to get together. And it's just, yeah, he's just standing there with his constipated look and she couldn't be stuffed, I don't think.
Pretty much. But yeah, I mean, I guess it was already taking a bit of a serious turn, but then this is the point where it takes its very serious twist, where before they can get Claude back on base and back in his uniform, while Berger's there filling in for him, suddenly the call comes for everyone to move out and get loaded onto transport planes to be flown off to Vietnam.
So that was bad timing, I think, on their behalf. But yeah, and that's where it kind of becomes quite, I remember the first time I'd seen it, you know, quite climactic. And you're like, oh, wow, oh, my God, this is, you know, something that you weren't expecting. You knew something was going to happen. You knew someone was going to end up going off to war, but you didn't know this was going to happen. So it was a clever twist, I think.
Yeah, and then, yeah, like, I was worried that we'd get a montage of Burger over in Vietnam, but instead they cut back to like a big gathering of people. Is it outside the White House? I think
it is. But that's one of those scenes where it's really well done and really quite poignant, I suppose is the word. And you know, I think it either goes from that shot or the other way around, but it goes from a shot of, I think, rather than, you know, to sort of symbolise that he's passed, you know, he died in war. You know, they got that huge scene with all the poppies, I think it is. And then I think it then fades into that scene outside the White House. And it's actually quite well done. When I have actually screened it in the past, and a few people have, you know, got quite teary during that one bit. And it is quite well done, you know, especially something unexpected for a movie musical. So,
yeah, the shot of the gravestone with his name on there and then, yeah, just dissolving out and, you know, just launching into that final song. Yeah, it's like poignant and sad and joyful all at the same time, which I think is probably the essence of the musical itself that they were trying to bring over to the movie as well.
Yeah, just a shame it didn't quite follow as well as it could have, but I could just be a purist. That's it. So that is a, you know, that whole Let the Sunshine In, you know, and being such an iconic song, you know, what a great, I know that's the thing, that's one thing the movie is good at. It's bookended by two quite very well known songs, Age of Aquarius and Let the Sunshine In. So it's quite a it is quite a good way to open and finish. So
yeah, and then when it fades off to the credits, we get a reprise of the big one, of Hair, and it was so good. It was so good to have good music over closing credits. Since we are forever destined to have to watch to the very end.
I did wait for a hairy stinger, but alas, it was 1979, so...
Yeah, they really didn't do stingers back then, Christian. I mean.
Oh, well, next time. But yeah, so, oh, wow, we're at the end of the movie already. And, yeah, we have raised a few interesting things about it. And hopefully I've got a few of my frustrations out about the stage adaptation of it, you know, and how it has translated onto screen.
Indeed. So, since the air, again, we've gone to the end of the movie. Can't really go much further than the closing credits. So I guess it's time to work out if this movie is redeemable. Now, you chose a Christian, so I shall go first.
For sure.
With my thoughts. And yeah, like you mentioned earlier, with that high rating, and while I was watching it, I was thinking, why does Christian think this movie needs to be redeemed? I mean, you have explained that since. But I mean, really, it was an enjoyable movie. I mean, there were some dodgy moments, some pretty bad continuity, and just some glaring inconsistencies throughout. But I think the fact that they stood out so much, is actually a bit of a testament to how good the rest of the movie is. It definitely got a bit long in the tail, though. That final third of the movie just kept on going, and it didn't have that high energy, because, you know, the first half of the movie is music, dance, outrage, which is fantastic. But yeah, with the second half, it just slows right down. It just loses all momentum. But I mean, really, by the end of the day, it still ended up being a very enjoyable movie, and I was very happy to have watched it. And I don't think it should have needed our attention, because without a doubt, it is completely redeemable, and I will be more than happy to watch it again.
Oh, that's fantastic to hear, Trevor, and I almost feel as you were saying that, oh, maybe I shouldn't have chosen this, but it's good to hear that, good to hear that there was one that was more in your favour this time, because it feels like it's been a while. So I suppose you're interested to hear some of my thoughts about Hair. Now, this wasn't the first time I'd seen it. I had watched it, you know, quite a few times, and as I've mentioned, I first fell in love with, I suppose, the musical, not the movie, you know, via the movie. So I was quite interested in, you know, getting to know the music a lot more, and I have since got, I think, pretty much every soundtrack of it, and even a CD of songs that were cut out of it as well, and even the movie soundtrack. And it's interesting, even the movie soundtrack uses a lot of songs that were cut out as sort of background tracks or songs heard on the radio. So I'll give Milos Forman a bit of credit with that at least he was able to you know, give us fans something a little bit extra as well that, for making up for what he'd cut out. But exactly what you said, Trevor, it is an enjoyable film. I found that it was a bit too long. And yeah, I know pinpointing would probably be the second half or the third act, as you mentioned. But I even found that even from sort of 25 minutes on, it sort of started to lag. When it sort of got to be less consistent, sort of at the start you were sort of having a song and then probably a break of 2 or 3 minutes and then another song. And then obviously it became, you know, a lot of a bigger gap sort of about sort of half an hour into it. So that's when I was starting to find that, yeah, it was losing its energy, and it sort of doesn't feel the whole big movie musical that you come to expect. And it sort of does run out of steam in the second half when it does get quite heavy. But as I said before, that is essentially what Hair was all about, a protest against the Vietnam War, and probably showing it from the hippie point of view, which is, this is, hey guys, we don't want to go to war because this is what can happen, and we see on screen what can happen. So I do like the fact, as I said, they used all of the songs. Sorry, I'm just going through my notes here. And definitely, Trevor, I can't diss the film in respect to, it is enjoyable and I would happily watch it again. It disappoints me every time I watch it, because I'm like, wow, I'd love to see a real movie musical of Hair. And the actual creators of the musical have said, oh, a real movie musical of Hair hasn't yet to be produced. So I don't know if it ever will. And I don't know if it would actually be still relevant. Most stage shows in recent years have failed because people are saying it's not relevant anymore. So I think we have to contend with what we've got. So it is definitely a redeemable movie, but yeah, so many things I don't like about it. So, yeah, I won't be going back to watch it too many more times again.
Fair enough. But that means, though, at the end of the day, we have a redeemable movie.
We do. Woo! Yes. It feels like it's been a while, so I'm glad. You know, I'm glad I chose wisely. Oh, actually, maybe I didn't choose wisely. I think I need to dig a bit deeper next time.
No, that's quite all right. Because, you know, Christian, it may have its detractors from, based on fans of the musical, but it certainly has its big fans. And I've got another one, another review from Amazon that I think we should have as a final word on the movie. The title of this is One of My Absolute Favorites. This is one of my favorite films, and I am always surprised at how people have never heard of it, and how underrated it is. The music and choreography are wonderful, the singing is spectacular, and the ending just makes me cry and cry and cry. It's funny. Treat Williams is adorable, and the story is very well woven in to make the songs make sense. If you like the 60s, musicals, dancings, and stories about the Vietnam War, this is for you. Give it a try. 5 stars.
Oh, it's good to see it's got its fans out there. And hey, when I say fans, I mean it's big, hardcore fans. And I completely support all those views as well. So, and they're probably someone that loves the movie version and hasn't got any sort of connections too much to the stage show.
Well, who knows? Well, I'm just glad that other people like it because, like I said, I certainly do as well. So, thank you, Christian. Thank you for picking a movie that I enjoyed so much. And hopefully, I can return the favour.
Hope so too. Gosh, I'm looking forward to what goodies we've got in store now.
Absolutely. So, so we shall move on. Now, I know that you enjoy doing the movie musicals, and it's one of the genres you like to dip into every now and then. So I'm actually going to dip into one of mine and look at the computer game to movie Deep Dark Abyss again and pick a movie that's kind of relevant in that we've currently got the Assassin's Creed movie in development with Michael Fassbender. But before that, there was a movie made on the kind of spiritual predecessor to the Assassin's Creed games, Prince of Persia. So I think we need to head back to 2010 and check out the Jake Gyllenhaal and Ben Kingsley movie, Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time.
Interesting. I have heard of it. I actually thought it was more recent than that. I know I'm going into this completely cold and knowing it didn't know it was anything to do with Assassin's Creed or anything like that. Or is it more the fact, is that more just the video title, the fact that we're doing a video game?
Yeah, well, I kind of, I mean, I won't delve into the history of the various video game franchises, but, it's not like a direct link, but the Assassin's Creed games definitely took inspiration
okay.
from the Prince of Persia franchise. And, this one, I mean, it's rated 6.6 out of 10 on IMDb, so it is up there a little bit, but this is a movie that basically just didn't do any business, and Disney, who were behind the scenes in this one, I believe, were hoping it would turn into a franchise on the scale of Pirates of the Caribbean, but that never happened. So maybe we can find out why.
Exactly. I'm looking forward to seeing it, Trevor, because at the moment, all I'm thinking of is the Lawrence of Arabia for the noughties. So I might be in a totally different realm to where we're going. So I'm going in it cold. Looking forward to it. And hopefully, as you said, with a high rating like Hair, you never know, we might have another redeemable movie for us. So I'm looking forward to it.
We certainly can hope. And of course, we would love to hear from anyone out there what your opinion is of Prince of Persia, The Sand of Time. Let us know your redeeming features. Let us know your reasons why you think it's not redeemable. We would love to hear from you. If you think we have been too generous on Hair, do you think we've been too harsh? We'd love to know that as well. Or even if you have any suggestions for a redeeming features movie that you would like to challenge us with. We've had a couple of challenges. We have not been able to redeem the movies we've been challenged to redeem. So there's always a first time. You never know. But you can get in touch with us super duper easy. You can head to our homepage, rufusproject.com, and leave a comment below this very episode. You can send us an email to podcast@rufusproject.com. You can find the Rufus Project super duper easily on Twitter and Facebook and get in touch with us there as well. If you do head to the homepage, I do ask that if you are currently subscribing through iTunes, we are going to have to update the feed. I am in the process of getting the new feed through iTunes at the moment, but if you want to hit that feed early, you can subscribe through rufusproject.com. There's a subscribe button on the site, but don't worry, I will definitely have both feeds going simultaneously for the time being until I know everything is running smoothly. I really want everything to run smoothly.
I'm glad we've got everything in your capable hands, Trevor. I'm glad.
Yeah, well, hopefully We've made some changes again after our software failed horribly the first time we tried to record hair. fingers crossed we have enough backup capability and fallbacks now that if something falls down, there's something else that's going to pick it up.
Yeah, I think we'll be fine, Trevor. And yeah, nothing's going to stand in the way of everyone hearing hair. So I'm looking forward to Prince of Persia, something totally different. So I'm looking forward to chatting that.
Excellent. So I guess that's probably a good spot to wrap it up. So again, Christian, the movies, well, this time it was redeemable. They may not always be redeemable, but it is always awesome to have these chats. So thank you very much, Christian.
Definitely. Thanks very much, Trevor. Always a pleasure to be able to suggest them too, and indulging me in a few things. So I'm glad we were able to redeem it. So let's see if Prince of Persia can be the same. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. See you next time.
See ya.
Good to be bad, so bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? Got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy? Oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. I'm VP, says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy? Oh boy.
Redeeming features.